Hello, and welcome to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, where we give you insights into the mind, brain, behavior, and creativity. Each episode will feature a new guest who will stimulate your mind and give you a greater understanding of yourself, others, and the world we live in. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the podcast. We have Jared Kreinert on the show. I usually introduce my guests, but I think I'll have Jared kind of talk about himself in this one, because you're quite an interesting fellow, aren't you?
I would hope so. I mean, that's why you have me on your podcast.
You have a very interesting trajectory to what you're doing, which I really like. First of all, how old are you?
19 as we record today.
So you're still a teenager.
Yeah, it's my birthday is October 16th, so unfortunately I'm not going to be a teenager much longer, but I am enjoying my teenagerhood for the last few months that I have it.
Well, now, when is your book due out?
July 28th.
Before you turn 20.
Yep.
Thank goodness.
There'll be a teenager.
That would have been awkward. The title of your book is called 2 Billion Under 20. Is that right?
Yeah. 2 billion under 20 millennials are breaking down age barriers and changing the world.
Okay, so you believe millennials are changing the world?
I think
that's a hypothesis.
I think it's inevitable.
Could be wrong. No, but you're saying it's true. And so how are they changing the world, Jared?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, depending on whether you want to look at entrepreneurship and how millennials are changing that space, if you want to look at corporate America, if you want to look at education, which you're a huge proponent of, and you're in the thick of it at Penn, there's a lot of places to look. So I guess I can start with the basics. Millennials seem to be more of an entrepreneurial generation than generations past. And I think that is because we are the first generation that you could go on the internet like I did at 15 and try and start a business. And that really hasn't been possible before. You know, in past generations, you could have started a business at 15, but you'd have to do it brick and mortar style, or you'd have to, you know, do a garage sale or a car wash or something else that would just require a lot more moving parts. Whereas you can just use the internet and pop something up today, whether you're 10 or whether you're 100. And I think that fundamentally changes things. With technology also comes the rise in social media and different communication channels that allow millennials to voice their opinions more than other generations have been able to. So unfortunately, I think we get the narcissistic label a lot, or have gotten right. The narcissistic label in the past a lot.
I've used that label.
To describe millennials.
Yeah. Well, there's interesting research on that showing that millennials on tests of narcissism do score higher.
Right. I mean, I think that at times it can be misconstrued as well. And I think that, you know, the use of social media and the ability for millennials to really speak their mind more than past generations have been, or speak their mind and have it heard more globally at a more rapid pace, while it does lend itself to potential narcissism if you get carried away with it, I think it does have a lot of really good benefits as well. And that's when you can see the social movements that you've been able to see in the past few years really cooperate together and thrive at a global level. You can see people connecting at global scale. You can see youth leading youth at global scale. And that's really something that hasn't been able to happen before. But now you have communities like 2 Billion Under 20. You have things like the Thiel Fellowship. You have
right.
Even Malala and her work, you know, has all been youth leading youth at a global scale. And that's really not been able to be possible before at the level and at the speed that it is now. So I think that's really interesting, and it's eventually going to create, I hope, a more understanding world, and a world where there's less hatred and there's just more cooperation amongst individuals despite ethnicity, socioeconomics, any of the barriers that exist between us. So I do fundamentally think that millennials are going to start creating more understanding. And obviously we're not there yet, but I think that's another, you know, really different thing about millennials and past generations, is that we'll be a more understanding generation. And who knows what that'll translate to in education or in business. it might be too early to tell.
Right. No, this is all a good point. I think that the technology has certainly given your generation a voice in a way that like my generation really didn't get a chance. Although my generation was just starting with the whole internet revolution, we had more private voices like Friendster and stuff. But yeah, I think so. Do you think that the millennials, like this generation, they actually care about more issues impacting the world, or just they are given more of a chance now to actually express those interests?
I think the second one probably fuels the first. You know, if you're able to voice your opinion and you start seeing results from it, and maybe things happen at a local level that, you know, push you up in the hierarchy in terms of social status and, you know, in terms of recognition from your peers, or if you actually see change being made and you're able to, you know, raise $20,000 for a hospital, or you're able to crowdfund, you know, $50,000 for your new tech invention, I think that naturally is going to get more people to do more of that positive thing. So I think the second fuels the first.
That's a really good point. And now you've been really busy. So let's kind of like outline all these things that you're involved in. So you're a co-author of this book, 2 Billion Under 20. You're a co-author with Stacy Ferreira,
yeah. She's another young entrepreneur. I guess her claim to fame is that when she was 18, she raised $1 million, or actually a little over $1 million, from Richard Branson and a couple other people, essentially off of a tweet. So talk about the use of technology.
Wow. Wait, Richard Branson saw a tweet that she wrote?
No. So I guess I'm going to share her story, I guess. But
please do.
Yeah. So she was on Twitter one day, saw Richard Branson had made a tweet about a charity event that he had coming up in Miami.
Okay.
Said, "Join me for intimate cocktails, $2,000 a person. You know, email this person if you're interested."
Wow.
And she saw this tweet. She was working on creating a company called My Social Cloud with her brother and a third co-founder at the time. And her and her brother, you know, got the cash together to, like, within 48 hours go to Miami and, like, make this $4,000 bet plus airfare and food and whatnot to meet Richard Branson. And they ended up meeting him. They pitched him their idea. And then a few months later, Richard Branson asked a couple of his colleagues, Jerry Murdoch and Alex Welch, to go visit the two in LA. And within 3 months of meeting Branson, they had $1.2 million in seed funding.
Wow. Well, so she was quite a go-getter.
Yeah, she's amazing. And then they sold the company within 18 months to Reputation.com. So she's one of the youngest female tech entrepreneurs to have an exit of that magnitude. And yeah, just been amazing co-author and co-founder.
Is she a millionaire?
I don't know. It was undisclosed how much she was bought out for. But yeah, she's doing all right, I guess. She's living in Manhattan.
Wow. Well, she just stoked the envy of lots of 21-year-olds listening to this podcast right just now.
Well, she's 22 herself now, so
yeah, probably still a lot of 21-year-olds envious. probably still true.
Probably some 41-year-olds.
There's probably some 60-year-olds or some 36-year-olds envious.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but no, we've been busy with the book launch, as you said.
Let's get back. We'll focus back on you now. Yeah.
No. It's a battery pack. We come together. But we're both working on the book launch.
Well, how did you meet her then? Well, tell me that backstory.
Sure.
Do you tweet at her or something?
No, I didn't tweet at her. We met and shook hands in a New York City subway for 5 minutes, and that
what?
Led to a partnership. But
what? Are you serious?
Well, yes. It came because we were both in town and we were both at the Thiel Foundation Summit in November of 2012.
Were you a fellow?
I'm not a fellow. Okay. Actually, Stacy just became a fellow.
Okay.
It's cool news. But we were both there. I was, I don't even know how old I was at the time. I think I was still 17. Or I just turned 17. And
that was a long time ago.
I know. Crazy. Light years. But I just turned 17. I was in New York, and Stacy was also at the event, although I didn't know that until probably 2 days in.
Yeah.
But we were at the Thiel Foundation Summit, and for people who are listening that don't know what the Thiel Foundation is, it's Peter Thiel and his kind of nonprofit. Part of what they do is trying to get young entrepreneurs and scientists to take a look at education as potentially not the path to acting on their businesses or their science endeavors. And he pulls kids out of school for 2 years to build their businesses, create nuclear fusion reactors or whatever crazy science stuff that, you know, some of the fellows are doing. And he gives them $100,000 grant to do this. Wow. So they also have these summits that they put on once every 6 months or so. And we were at the summit. The summit was actually where I got the idea for the book, because we were listening to a talk that said there was about 20 people selected for the fellowship each year. It's about 200 people in the room that day, but 2 billion people in the world, 20 years old or younger. And we
that's in the whole world?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that many people.
No?
I guess it is, though. 2 billion, that's a lot. Okay, Lizzie's confirming this.
Start counting the 2 billion under 20, and we'll see how long the podcast episode goes.
That's a really good point. Okay. So how many people are in America?
How many young people or just how many people?
How many people?
About 320 million.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Okay, wow. Okay, so that's a huge audience then. But that includes people who are zero age, right? The people who are like 2 months old.
Yeah, everyone under 20.
So, but in your book, do you feature like who do you feature? Do you feature the whole gamut of ages from 0 to 20?
Not zero, but I think we have a couple people that were like preteens, so, you know, 11 or 13. Most people are college age, I would say. And then the people are all varying. We have Olympians in the book. We have teenage entrepreneurs.
Cool.
Who've raised, you know, money and or have started building successful businesses. We have singers. We have actors. We have scientists and like kids who've developed nuclear fusion reactors in their garages or have developed early detection tests to detect cancer. And then we have like a girl lost 150 pounds and saved her life. We have literally the entire gambit of people you'd want from all over the world and all walks of life.
And so the book drops July 28th.
Yeah. Excited.
What do you say?
I'm excited.
You should be.
Over 2 years in the works.
So it was over 2 years in the works. And you did how many interviews throughout the course of that?
So the unique part about the book is that everyone wrote their own anecdotes. And so we reached out, but everyone wrote their own 1 to 3 page stories. So we didn't actually interview them. We got in touch with them. They decided to contribute their own personal stories as written by them. And then we just edited the hell out of everyone's stories and made sure it was, you know, book ready. So it was a really interesting process. Would I do it again? I don't know. You know, we didn't necessarily write a 350-page book, but we managed like a community of 300 plus people, and that's equally as difficult, if not more.
Yeah, I mean, you must have had a bit of a team. Did you have research assistants or?
No, just me, really, just me and Stacy, and then everyone took on their their own writing. We edited the initial drafts, and then we had a professional editor, and then St. Martin's Press is our publisher, so they came in and they did more edits, and you know, the rest is history.
Very cool. Do you feature any, like, I guess you would have featured some prodigies like Jacob Barnett?
Jacob, for various reasons, couldn't be in the book, but his mom actually endorsed the book.
Worded it, right? Yeah.
It's I think because of his own book and because of just rights that he signed away at a young age, he couldn't be featured in another book. Or
right.
He could be featured in it, but he couldn't write his own story.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
But you feature, I mean, I think an area of overlap of both of our interests is so-called gifted children, but, you know, children that just do remarkable things. At a really young age, well beyond what's expected based on their age. So, I mean, in a way, this is also a catalog of gifted children, this book.
Absolutely.
I'm not a big fan of that phrase. But, you know, these are extraordinary people. What do you think are some of the character, if you don't mind me, like, discussing some psychological aspects of this, because this is something that I'm really interested in.
Yeah.
What would you say are some uniting characteristics that all these people seem to share? Would you think grit was a big part of a lot of them?
Sure. If you want to talk about someone that most people would deem a prodigy in the traditional sense, it's someone like Jack Andraika. who he's the one who developed at 15 an early detection test for pancreatic, lung, and ovarian cancers, and won Intel's iSub competition. Now he speaks around the world about opening up access to science information.
Spoke at the same National Association for Gifted Children conference I did.
There you go.
Yeah, just last year. Yeah. It went down. His talk went down very well. It was very popular.
Yeah, his backstory in terms of grit was, you know, at 15 or 14 even, when he had what he thought might have been an early detection test.
Yeah.
He reached out to, I think, 200 different professors, and 199 said no or didn't answer his request to working in their labs, and one gave him a lukewarm yes, and that's the one he went to and ultimately made his creations with. But that takes a lot of grit.
Yeah, I'd say so. But is that grit or is that chutzpah? I've been thinking about trying to measure, come up with a chutzpah scale.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to explain that for the non-Jews listening to the podcast.
Are you non-Jewish, Kleiner?
No, I'm definitely Jewish. I mean, Kleiner's a very Jewish last name.
I was going to say, so you knew what I meant.
Yeah.
By the way, we don't have non-Jews listening to this podcast. this is purely the Jewish network. no, that's not true. I'm sure there's plenty. All are welcome. All are welcome to listen to this podcast. Like chutzpah is kind of this Yiddish phrase for someone who's a go-getter and like a but there's kind of like a sense in which like how dare you? You know what I mean? Like you're kind of unreasonable go-getter, you know. But it's still like good. Like, you know, like I when I was like how old was I? People have often described me as having chutzpah. Like when I was in college, I emailed the head of the psychology department at Cambridge University, and I said, "Hey, can I study with you?" Like, people are like, "How could you like email the head of the department?" You know, like,
"Oh my god, an email!"
Right? Like, people are like, "That's you have a lot of chutzpah." And I mean, I see that in you, Jared. You just reached out to me. You're like, "Hey, I'm going to be at Penn. Like, I stop by your office." Like, I mean, there's a certain characteristic there. Not, I don't think everyone has that.
Sure. I mean, actually, Adam Grant connected us, but I guess had chutzpah in connecting with him. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, you had a lot of chutzpah connecting with Adam. That's right. So good for you. So tell me some more of the other things you noted. I know that like you weren't prepared necessarily to do a full analysis, but I'd love to hear some of your intuitions about what you think are these characteristics. Because you know, I write about this a lot. You know, what drives creativity. So.
Sure. I think for various reasons, I don't know. It'd be interesting to revisit all the contributors and do another kind of interview series with them to figure out how they found exactly what they were passionate about. But all of them are acting on their passions in one way or another, which is very interesting. And I think that contributes to them all being prodigies and them all, you know, finding and acting on their gifts, because I do think that everyone has the potential to act on their passions. I do think everyone has the potential to do something great, and that, you know, there's multiple forms of intelligence. You know, so you don't just have to be book smart to be intelligent.
I disagree. I think there's only one kind of intelligence.
Really?
No, I'm sorry.
Interesting.
No, that's my whole shtick. I agree with you.
So
my whole shtick is there's multiple. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, all these people definitely acted on their passions, and it'd be interesting to find out from them what triggered that, because I'm sure it differed. For some of them, it might have been traumas. You know, I know one of our contributors, Dao Jock, grew up and lost his father in the Sudanese Civil War.
Wow.
And then ended up escaping that situation, came to America, taught himself English in 6 years, and ended up getting on Penn's campus. And he was the captain of the Penn basketball team for a couple of years, that's an incredible story. And maybe trauma was the trigger for him to realize his gifts both in basketball and then more importantly in leadership and then developing a nonprofit under his father's name.
Wow.
For other people, and I think Jack has a similar story where it was a family member who had pancreatic cancer and he did just, you know, wanted to eradicate that disease. So, I mean, trauma might be one of them. For, you know, entrepreneurship, there might just be this sense of like, if someone else can do it, why can't I? And it doesn't matter that I'm younger or older. If I have the chutzpah and I have, you know, the work ethic, then why can't I go after my dreams? for, you know, I don't know exactly where all the triggers were, but you can definitely see in the book that every single person has acted on their passions in life. And that is why they can be deemed prodigies.
Yeah. So
it's an interesting line to look at.
It's a very interesting line to look at. I really like these insights that you're giving here. You know, it reminds me of this book, Developing Talent in Young People by Bloom, which is kind of considered like a Bible for a lot of us in the field of talent development. And he identifies three kind of stages or things that are really important towards this path towards high performance or creativity. The first is really this play, falling in love part of the equation. It is a very common stage among these young people who develop extraordinary talents. And then the second stage is more of a precision kind of methodology where they have mentors and they learn from people about technique. And then this third part is this purpose part where they kind of realize through all of this work that it kind of forms a bigger picture, and they see where, you know, very specifically their passion fits into helping something beyond the self.
Sure.
Do you recognize these three things in these people that you were talking to?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people in the book that seeked out mentors along the way. I know I've done it myself for my own journey. I know Stacy's done it.
Yeah.
And you know, definitely with the entrepreneurs in the book, you see them, you know, seeking the mentors that kind of would trigger the change, or would trigger the one book that they read that gave them the mindset shift that allowed them to then go out and do their thing. Everyone in the book is really entrepreneurial, actually, right. whether they're entrepreneurs or not. You know, so we have right. singers in the book who have taken on their careers in different lights and have used the platform of singing to then also sign book deals and also sign fashion deals and then get paid to wear clothes and get paid to write, which are two passions of, you know, Talia, who's our Scottish pop star in the book. And you know, it's kind of cool to get paid to write and wear clothes if that's two things you enjoy. You know, she'd probably...
I don't like wearing clothes.
No.
I would much prefer being naked all day, but it's...
The Jewish-only naked podcast.
I should do that. That podcast. Who would I interview, Jared?
I don't know, just like naked rabbis or something.
I feel like that would be the weirdest... podcast in the
history. That's the name of your podcast, the Naked Rabbi Podcast.
I mean, that would just be like so bizarre and yet amazing.
Just awesome. Have a picture of a rabbi like covering his stuff with a kippah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I or showing me, you know, dressed as a rabbi covering myself with a kippah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, maybe we should move on from that mental image now that our audience has that mental image deeply informed, ingrained in their mind.
This is great.
Yeah, it's great. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So, okay, you mentioned someone who likes to wear clothes and gets paid for doing it.
Yes. Yeah, so Talia. Talia is a cool story where – actually, that's a perfect mentor story.
What's this person? Is this a female?
Yep, Talia Storm.
Talia Storm, okay. I'll put her in the show notes.
She's a new virgin recording artist in Scotland.
Okay.
And when she was 13, she was discovered by Elton John.
Wow.
She actually, you know, she had a cool opportunity where she was like on vacation.
Do you know, I actually discovered Elton John.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. When he was 13. So we pay these things back. You know,
I think one of your amazing gifts is the use of sarcasm.
Oh, really? So if I made your book, that would be the only thing that you highlight about me?
Potentially, but you would.
He's a sarcastic ass, basically.
the sarcastic naked rabbi.
Yeah.
But no, she was found by Elton John at 13, and by like 15 or 16 was just, you know, has tens of thousands of Twitter followers and Instagram followers. Right. She's making a name for herself. She kind of sounds like Amy Winehouse, but like the, you know, Amy Winehouse 2.0, and just super talented.
She looks really cool.
Yeah, and now she's...
I want to be her friend.
Yeah, you know, so now she's not only a singer with Virgin.
She's so going to sing.
Wow.
She's getting paid to wear clothes, and then she signed a two-book deal with Scholastic. So she, you know, my point 5 minutes ago before Naked Rabbis and mentors was that she's being really entrepreneurial about her career. And,
cool.
You know, she's not an entrepreneur by most people's like standards or by like Silicon Valley standards. You know, she's not starting a software business yet, but she is thinking about her career entrepreneurially. And a lot of the contributors are thinking about their careers or their lives entrepreneurially and really taking it into their own hands to make their paths rather than rely on people to craft safety nets for them or, you know, offer them things or wait for a job opening or an opening to appear in life and then, you know, applying or taking that. You have a lot of creators and you have a lot of people thinking entrepreneurially about their careers and lives rather than accepting what's given to them. And I think that is that's different about millennials than maybe our parents.
Yeah, I mean that is a significant difference. What do you think? What are the cultural factors? It's more than just technology. What else is going on there? What is education different? I feel like education still stinks.
Oh yeah, but maybe that's one of the big differences is that it is really not doing well. And then you also see new alternatives that haven't been there before.
Okay.
It's while it may have stunk for our parents, there was less alternatives to education. And like my mom and dad weren't like, you know, dropping out of college without a huge taboo. Whereas I've taken, you know, one gap year and I'm taking a second and still able to support myself financially. And also kind of, I'm sure it's a little taboo for some people, but I found the tribe that doesn't find it taboo. Yeah. And it's made it a lot easier to do so.
Do you think you may never go to college?
It's a possibility.
That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, right? You would still could still become a multi-billionaire entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get to multi-millionaire first and then worry about multi-billionaire, but...
It's kind of necessary to get there first. You can't be a multi-billionaire without first being a multi-millionaire, could you? I don't know. Maybe you could.
No, why don't you count to 2 billion and we'll see.
You got a little sarcastic ass in you too.
Oh yeah, that's why we get along.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we connected since we first met. You know, I'd be interested to hear kind of what your thoughts are on all this because you're a professor and you see very smart people at Penn all the time. Do you see a lot of these same characteristics in some of your students that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh my God, without a doubt, but I wouldn't say all. I'd say, you know, there are clearly some students who have, are driven by some sort of purpose or some sort of guiding light that other students haven't quite found yet. And, you know, I do see clear differences among the students, but I do think that we as teachers can play the role in activating or inspiring students. And one of my job requirements, as I see it, is to help inspire students to realize some sort of future image of themselves, or just to be inspired to like learn the material in the course.
Sure,
I think that's important.
I think that's another reason why we created 2 billion under 20 is that. Yes, we want to really inspire young people to act on their passions. And then we also want to send out kind of a radar to see who's out there. And if there are really crazy, wacky, talented millennials that we don't know about for some reason, you know, we want them to reach out and know about us so we can connect them to our online community and start doing cool stuff with them. But we also wrote the book to better educate educators and parents and, you know, people in corporate America about how millennials tick. Because if you just read, you know, the media of the last 5 years or so, you're not going to get a pretty picture of millennials. I mean, if you go to Google right now and you type in millennials are, you'd be amazed to see like what drops down in the auto suggestion.
Let's do it right now. Millennials are broke, stupid, lazy, the worst.
So nothing
I'm not making that up, folks.
So when we wrote the introduction to our book, the number one thing was stupid. So that's like how we started our book. It's like millennials are stupid. But you know, even if you there's some places where you can go and do that and you'll get 10 drop downs. You'll probably only get one of those drop downs that's positive. You know, so
I wonder if that's a more general phenomenon. Like if you type women are, you get women are like bacon, women are like cats, women are better than men.
isn't that based on what people search for in Google?
Why are people searching for women are like bacon?
I don't know.
That's weird.
We can't talk about that on the Naked Jewish Podcast, though, because we're not allowed to have bacon, of course.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But this is my other podcast right now. So, wait a minute. So there's like give me something else. Let's see if anything's men are. Let's do men are. Men are better than women. That's funny because women are better than men. Yeah. Men are better than women. Men are visual. Men are from Mars. Women are from Venus. Okay, so that's not as bad. I mean, are maybe just people on Google are just negative. I'm just trying to think scientifically about this. Like maybe it's not specific to millennials. What about, let's say, Generation X are slackers? So look, no one's good. No one's positive. We need more positive search terms. Maybe your book will improve that.
Yeah, well, I think reading these stories and, you know, seeing that it's 75 people and then really, you know, hundreds in our online community, it's not just the one-off, you know, feature on ABC or Fox that you're going to see the successful young person doing something cool like building a nuclear fusion reactor. And then it's like, oh, great, you know, little Timmy, who's 17, built a nuclear fusion reactor. Let's all pat him on the back and then Timmy goes back to his normal life. No, this is a generational message coming to you from people from over 20 different countries and literally all walks of life. You know, it's hard not to take note of this, and it's hard not to look at what trends can come out of this in terms of millennials. So I think it really can open up the eyes of educators, of parents, of, you know, people in corporate America about how millennials tick. And I think that's going to be another great byproduct of this book.
I really hope so, and I think I agree that it's a big possibility for it. So I want to wrap up here and just tell me any other projects that you're excited that you're working on right now.
Yeah, well, Stacey and I are going to be launching, you know, companies underneath the 2 billion under 20 brands. So intentions are definitely not just a book. Our intentions are, you know, a lot greater than that. Can't announce exactly what company or companies we're going to be building yet, but
the Naked Rabbi company.
Unfortunately not. Stacey's not Jewish, unfortunately. But
you know, Naked Rabbis really don't mind.
Yeah.
Interacting with people who are not. But okay, go on.
So I think one of our ventures will be to go to the Fortune 500 and go to the larger companies and help them better market to millennials, better hire millennials, better retain top young talent. Great. I think we'll also be doing initiatives to continue growing the 2 billion under 20 online community and maybe even bring it offline, but just continue providing more value to the people that we've profiled in the book and, you know, the people that end up reading the book. So I think those will be two of the things we're really focused on post-book launch. And then, you know, I've been growing my speaking business, so I've been traveling around the world and, you know, talking about 2 billion under 20, talking about millennials in the workplace, talking about youth entrepreneurship. And I'm actually getting ready to pitch my second book to publishers in August. So that'll be exciting.
Dude, you don't need college. Like kids don't go to college. That's what I'm saying with you.
Coming from the pen professor.
Yeah, I know. That's
so
irresponsible of me. I mean, I don't think college is for everyone. It sounds like you've, you know, for right now while you're on this path and you're cooking on all fours, you know, I say just keep going. And I wish you all the best, Jared.
I think that's the stance I take, and that 2 billion under 20, 2 billion under 20 takes is that do what's best for you. You know, if you're conscious about your goals, you're conscious about what options you have, and college makes sense to do, then by all means go do it and make sure you're getting a return from your educational investment. And if it means like taking a gap year, which is the focus of my second book, then by all means take a gap year and then reevaluate. If it means, okay, like turn the jets on, I got to be building businesses or, you know, inventing a cure for cancer, and that means no college right now, then don't do it. You know, it's really just being conscious about your decisions and then going with what's best for you.
Cool, man. Well, you're definitely leading a charge on this new philosophy, the philosophy of the millennials.
Yeah, I hope so.
So keep up the great work, and thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman. I hope you found this episode just as informative and thought-provoking as I did. If you'd like to read the show notes for this episode or hear past episodes, you can go to thepsychologypodcast.com.